south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. It seems no matter how many times I list the places that I think expats and gringos should never go, except maybe to visit and go on vacation, I still get emails from people asking me why I beat up on those places. For example, Mexico, Panama, Belize, Ecuador, Uruguay, and of course, my favorite Latin whipping boy, Costa Rica. I'd say at least once a week I get an email from someone or another up in the States who's visited Costa Rica, absolutely loves it. Of course, they've never been anywhere else in Latin America except maybe Tijuana, Cancun, Cozumel, Puerto Vallarta, and any number of gringo tourist trail places in Mexico. So generally, when I get emails like that, I don't bother writing back. Sorry. I mean, you pick your battles, right? And if they want to go to Costa Rica, more power to them. Just hope you have a big bank account and a big tolerance for gringos and a Latin kind of big brother and jaded locals who look at you as just a dollar sign. So why am I bringing up Costa Rica on the show today when people write me emails singing the praises of Costa Rica, which I instantly round file? Well, I just happen to like this guy that's got a very famous newsletter. His name is Jim Willie. You probably heard of him. His website, I believe, is thegoldenjackass.com, and it's called the Hat Trick Newsletter. He's a world-renowned commodities expert with a PhD in statistics. Now, he's the kind of no BS guy that can really sort the numbers. Now, he pops up regularly as a guest on alternative radio, and I heard him just the other day on my own favorite podcast show, Caravan to Midnight, with John B. Wells as the host. During that interview, he slipped in the fact that he's been living in Costa Rica for 8 years. Yeah, he did the VWYF, you know, vote with your feet, so you have to admire him for that. But he really picked the wrong place. Well, maybe he didn't pick it when he first landed 8 years ago, but he was lamenting on that radio show all the things that were going wrong with Costa Rica. For one, he said that Costa Rican Big Brother has grown to such a size and have found so many ways to milk businesses, specifically gringo businesses, that as a result, 2,000-plus U.S. businesses have left Costa Rica in the past 3 years. That's 2,000. By the way, I want you to note that rags like the Overseas Retirement Newsletter and International Living certainly don't talk about that kind of stuff. And then the host of the show asked Jim Willie, you've got 8 years living in Latin America. So what do Latin Americans, specifically Costa Ricans, think about what's happening up in the U.S.? And Jim Willie kind of laughed and he said, you know what? In the 8 years I've been in Costa Rica, I've only met probably three Latins in all that time who understand the U.S. is in big trouble and going down the tubes fast. The rest, when I bring it up, they just don't believe it. They say, how could that be? The U.S. has a huge military. They've got massive, beautiful cities with big buildings and high-rises. U.S. people have big ideas. They get things done. They got Hollywood, Vegas, Miami, and soon to have a $15 minimum wage. And of course, the topper, they've got Disney World and Disneyland. Yes, Jim Willie confessed that the average Latin, the above average Latin, even the so-called upscale intellectual Latins, are absolutely clueless. I like how expat Eddie puts it. He says, Latin Americans are intellectual cripples. Sound familiar? So then John Wells, the host, said, well, why do you live there then? He said, for one, it's well out of the reach of the long arm of Uncle Sam. Now, I have a feeling when he moved there 8 years ago, he did what so many disgruntled first world people do. He ended up in a tourist area in Latin America and kind of got stuck there. What with the nice, tropical, beautiful landscape and cheap cost of living, at least it was back then. Now, I'm not 100% sure because people don't like to disclose their assets and I don't blame them. But I'd say he probably did exactly what most expats do when they first get down to Costa Rica. Especially if they haven't got boots on the ground in the rest of Latin America. They end up buying some land, a condo, a beach house, a townhouse, whatever, maybe two. And maybe they buy into some big investment scheme like a teak plantation, avocados, pineapples, whatever. There's a lot of that stuff going around too. Although I don't know of any secondary gringo investors who've made any money that way. Only it seems the people who set up those deals. But that's a story I'll talk about on a future show, so stay tuned. Bottom line, as a result, almost no long-term expats in Costa Rica are happy anymore. They want out. And that's what happens when gringos invade. Such is progress, huh? So again, my advice, forget about Costa Rica, Belize, Panama, most of Mexico, Uruguay, most of Ecuador, Brazil, and Argentina. Now, that's not to say you can't find some excellent, inexpensive places there and some very great deals, but they are not nearly the virgin lands of opportunity anymore. Not like they used to be some 10 or 15 years ago. But still, that leaves expat gonna-bes and wannabes more than a dozen Latin countries to choose from. Yes, there are many places you could still live the life of Riley on a crap pension or a measly Social Security check. By now, you all realize you definitely need a plan B. Ideally, that would mean voting with your feet. Permanently. Most likely to a country in Latin America. I mean, why else are you listening to this program? The Expat Files living in Latin America, right? However, if you're stuck up in the States, you'll need that plan B because when the feces hits the ventilator, and it will, there will be no need to panic. Nope, no need to run around like a chicken with its head cut off. No need to go into a depression or lock yourself in the basement with your shotgun. You just remain cool, calm, and collected. Gather yourself and your things together and head down to that Latin country where you've already had some boots on the ground, where you've met some friends and have already developed a personal network. That's how you make an easy transition to Plan B. And one of the easiest ways to put your Plan B in motion? Come down to my July 2016 Expat Insider Seminar, of course. It'll be off the gringo tourist trail in and around Guatemala, Central America. You know, people ask me all the time, how long can you keep doing these seminars, Johnny? I say I'm going to do them until the feces hits the fan up north and suddenly you wake up one morning, the ATMs are out, and when you go to the bank, they're either closed or they tell you you can't get your dollars out for a couple of days. There'll be announcements of special measures and crackdowns at the border. Of course, not for people coming in, but for citizens like you who want to get out. Oh, and by the way, there's a lot of talk in the States now that there are going to be two kinds of passport documents. One to travel internally throughout the country, state by state, and one for international travel. George Orwell would be proud, huh? And the other day, you know, I was talking to a couple of gringos and that subject came up, and one of them said, you know, now that the IRS can block or void your passport if you owe more than $50,000 in back taxes, that of course means you can't leave the country, but does that mean you can't leave your state either? I mean, it looks like that's what's coming if they're going to have an internal passport document, too. Well, I can tell you this much. Shortly, when all that comes down, I won't be giving any more seminars because it'll just be way too tough for people to come on down. Which is why I'm saying you really should sign up for my Boots on the Ground July 2016 Expat Insider Seminar because as things look now, there just might not be another one. These days, high-powered people in the know are hinting that something terribly bad is right around the corner, and they're not talking about 10 years from now either. Now, only fools and astrologers will pick the date. Well, I guess they're one and the same, right? Fools and astrologers? I'm certainly not sticking my neck out to pick the crash date. That said, as conventional wisdom goes, having a plan B is like having an insurance policy. You never really want to use it, but it's there in case Hillary hits the fan. And you don't want to be anywhere near that mess when it happens. So just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's July 2016 seminar at the top of the page, and check out the itinerary and all the sign-up details. And there's a three-payment plan option, too. And while you're there, check out the optional pre- and post-seminar trips provided by the famous John Galt. And remember, if you sign up by May 1st, you get a $500 per person early bird discount. So check that out, too. Enough said about that. If you remember, on the last Expat Files show, we started an interview with a gringo tax expert who is located down in Medellin, Colombia. And we left off with me talking about how I ran into a gringo who went to one of the annual IRS April Milk and Cookies Embassy Open House events in Costa Rica, and he noticed he was being filmed by three tiny cameras as he was shooting the breeze with the IRS guys. And he realized then they weren't really there to help. They were just on a fishing expedition to find out about other gringos in Costa Rica who may be living beyond their means and thus future targets for IRS audits. Now note, in every Latin capital city, just before April 15, the IRS comes down and has a little open house. They put ads in the local papers inviting gringos to come in for milk and cookies and to answer tax questions. That's the premise anyway. So right now, let's continue that interview with our tax man, Vincent Villamina, answering questions from his office in Medellin, Colombia. So Vince, you say you got 600 or so expat clients. Have you had any that were audited under your watch, and what happened?
I have. First off, obviously, there are different levels of audits, right? So kind of depending on what sort of audit you're selected for, it might be more in-depth or not. Like, for example, one client in particular, he was like a seaman, but he lived in Costa Rica, actually. You know, A, we had to prove that he lived in Costa Rica, which was on the easier side. I think the biggest thing was, you know, getting the translations, et cetera, that of the documents, you know, his driver's license. He owned some land in Costa Rica, you know, just getting a translation of that sort of stuff. And then the second part being really tracking his movements through his ship's movements around the world. Because if you're a merchant seaman or you're an airline pilot for that matter, you're only allowed to exclude the money that you earned in either in waters or airspace of a country. You know, the time that he was in international waters, a pilot with or a stewardess with international airspace, that portion of time is not subject to the foreign earned income exclusion. So, like, that was a pretty tedious process, kind of tracking movements. Obviously, depends on people's records. And I think, you know, when there is an audit, you know, you want to make it really, really easy for the IRS agent to do their job.
Now, Vince, I know if you get audited in the States, if it's kind of a deep audit, they'll ask that you be present. I know, I've been through a few of those. So then what's the story on expats? They're far, far away, generally, from any IRS office. Could there ever be a demand from the IRS office saying that that person has to be there physically? Or do you just skip all that and sign a limited power of attorney over to your tax preparer?
You could either sign a POA, have your tax preparer come in, or, you know, with the expats, really everything is done online, right? And you could do an audit over the phone, email or fax your documents directly to the IRS agents, walk it through virtually.
Well, that's kind of a new one on me. You mean you can do an audit over the phone with an IRS agent? I guess that would be a four-way call then, right? Between the IRS, the tax preparer, the tax filer, and, of course, the NSA. Obviously, no milk and cookies there, right?
Generally, I recommend to just do me and the IRS agents. It's better to have a professional kind of handle it all together. You know, you don't want the client revealing too much or saying the wrong thing or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, I would say have a professional handle the audit from start to finish.
Okay, let's deviate a bit here. It says on your website you cater to expats who have businesses in the U.S. Now, with my experience, I see it's more the opposite. It's expats who are permanently down here. They have businesses outside the U.S. and they've more or less cut their ties with the States. They're the ones that need the expert tax advice.
We have expats that have business in the United States, right? Because they might have real estate or some other sort of U.S.-based businesses. And then actually, I would agree with you. Most of the time, it's expats that have a business either online or in the country where they reside.
Now, Vince, one of the questions that comes up for expats all the time is, what is necessary for an expat to report and what's not?
Sure. I mean, obviously, if you have foreign bank accounts, investment accounts, et cetera, you'd have to report it. This is all in the FBAR. Now, there's two forms to look at. One is the FBAR. The FBAR is the standard. If you have over $10,000 combined in several bank accounts at any point in time during the year, you have to report all those bank accounts. Number two is the 8938 form. That's a form for foreign financial assets, which include bank accounts. It's a greater net, if you will, of things. So it could include foreign companies or foreign stocks, bonds, mutual funds, you know, loans, partnership interests, etc. And so a few things to be aware of, especially with that form. Again, if you're living abroad, if you're single, that form is $200,000. If you're married, it's $400,000. If you own real estate in the name of a company, so like how the U.S. people might buy investment property in the name of an LLC, Latin America, like in Medellin or in Colombia, people buy it in the name of a SAS, then that becomes a foreign financial asset. So again, if you do not want to report it, then buy it in your own name. But obviously, if you put it in the name of a company, it becomes a financial asset. One thing that is not reportable would be any sort of art, collectibles, antique, etc. The other big thing that people always ask is, what about having gold or precious metals in storage? Now, that depends on if it's stored in a vault, right, where you could physically go there and hold your gold bars or bullion or coins, etc., or if it's stored in more of a like a custodial account, Perth Mint, etc. Gold Monte Perth Mint, it's obviously gold, but it's stored in a financial account. And so those would be reportable. Again, anything in like a safe deposit box or a physical vault that's physical is not reportable. Anything that in a bank account or some sort of custodial account would be reportable.
Okay, now let's talk about something new that's near and dear to everyone's heart and future heart attack, Obamacare. I understand if you're an expat and out of the country more than 330 days a year, you file a form so you don't incur the Obamacare penalty. I think now, if you don't buy into some kind of insurance plan in the States, it's a couple hundred bucks penalty, soon to drastically escalate. But you're exempt from all that if you're out of the country 330 days or more a year.
No, that's true. I mean, if you're living outside the U.S., if you are an expat, you do not have to worry about Obamacare.
Now, I can tell you I know a couple of gringos who came down here so long ago during the Vietnam days as aging hippies, and they never left. They also haven't filed taxes since the good old Woodstock, Jimi Hendrix, Carnaby Street, and Peter Max hippie days. Yet they're still in good standing with the IRS because they made under that minimum amount every year. And I think it's now $10,600 for a single person. So the IRS rules say you don't have to file if you make under that amount. Or you can if you like. Either way. However, these guys are worried about that Obamacare thing. They understand now they might have to file just to say they're down here full-time and therefore not part of the Obamacare plan. Or else, supposedly, the fines will start adding up. They're kind of worried because they just might have to get on the grid again.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're right about that. If it's under $10,600, they don't have to file. I mean, anything with Obamacare, again, you do not have to worry about it if you do have a residency abroad. It's just claiming the exemption and saying that you're a foreign tax resident. The two ways to claim the exemption would be obviously saying that you're abroad. Some are members of religious organizations that don't believe in that. So that's another way to apply for that.
So when I run into these guys who make under the $10,600 limit, I can tell them it's no problem to continue with their old non-filing ways and Obamacare won't get in the way either.
You know? No, again, I mean, they would have to file because they're underneath the threshold anyway. Right, amen. Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many gringos you run into that have gone native and guys and gals who came down and never left because they found their niche building solar outhouses for Jesus. Some of them think Jimmy Carter's still in office, you know?
Yeah, they got their own Sherman medicine doctor that they see anyway. That's in the right. Jungle.
Now, what about that new law that was just passed saying that if you owe more than $50,000 in taxes, they can pull your passport or not renew it if it's expired? What can you tell us about that?
Obviously, people are concerned about it. There's still some sort of implementation period. You know, personally, no. Have I had a case where someone's gotten their passport taken away because of not filing? No, I have not. Have I heard potentially somebody being stopped at a border and asked about their taxes? That I have. For example, I have one particular gentleman who was a teacher at like the American school in Bahrain and he did get stopped, and then the next day the IRS came to his parents' house where he was registered address. I think part of that was the fact that, again, he was working for an American school. You know, that American school was producing W-2 information to the IRS. So it was easy for them to track him. You know, same thing if you were taking money out of a retirement account, have a lot of, brokerage transactions.
So I can see that would be a problem if you don't file in your W-2 forms, stack up, and get sent back to the IRS.
Yeah.
So the IRS actually has to have proof in the form of W-2 forms or some kind of statements from employees or brokerage accounts for them to make a case against you anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You know, obviously the rest when it comes to being an expat is mostly self-declaration, meaning you're telling them how much you made.
And as you know, unless an expat works for a transnational company like, let's say, Walmart or Home Depot, your Latin employer, if you have one, won't be sending out any W-2 forms. They don't even know what they are because they have different, much more abbreviated tax systems in Latin countries. And of course, most expats who do work and have a job have their own businesses, which means they're, quote, on the honor system to send back that info to the IRS. Now, of course, we don't advocate doing anything illegal at all, but you know, what's considered illegal up in the States concerning taxes, etc., is often not illegal at all in foreign jurisdictions. In fact, I understand there are only 3 countries in the world now where you have to pay taxes and report income from outside sources. That would be the U.S., Eritrea, and Brazil.
Brazil actually has a very similar sort of FATCA reporting or whatever, where other citizens and residents have to report all their assets.
And I hear Colombia is following that pattern too. And I believe Canada is going to implement that shortly also.
If you're a resident of Colombia, you have to report your worldwide income.
Is that right? So then everybody should take note of the fact that Colombia is doing the same thing as the U.S. So you can no longer use that as a reason to move to Colombia. They now are taxing your worldwide income, as is Brazil. And of course, the world's biggest offender, the U.S. Now, Vince, State Department and other figures say that there are over 10 million U.S. citizens living abroad now, and over 1.5 million of them are living in Mexico. And that number is increasing all the time. People are figuring out what's happening up north, and they're voting with their feet. In fact, so many are leaving the country. H&R Block Tax Services have gotten into the act. I noticed they're advertising down here in Latin America now. They're targeting expat gringos, saying they've got a new expat tax service. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, a few things. I mean, obviously, H&R Block is, as everyone knows, you know, kind of the more simpler returns. I mean, they could do the tax return, but I don't think they're the ones that are going to help people kind of with tax planning and really thinking through more complicated issues. I mean, if someone's living abroad and earning a pension, sure, I mean, it might be a good resource. But I don't think H&R Block is going to be a good resource for people that are really trying to be smart about planning and, you know, have somebody that they could reach out to throughout the year to ask questions, et cetera. Because I think bad part about H&R Block that I heard was there is a lot of turnover there. And so, you know, your tax preparer that you worked with 1 year might not be the same one that you work with next year. Give the person up to speed on your situation and your nuances, et cetera. And I think that's kind of a little bit of the downside of H&R Block versus obviously with our firm. You know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm one of the partners. And so we're always going to be there to help out from year to year and also do a lot of planning, right? I mean, I think that's the biggest kind of value add is not just the prep, but helping people understand their financial decisions, their investment decisions, where they want to put money. You know, you want to buy real estate, don't put it in your name so you don't have to report it.
Now, Vince, you know, a lot of expats are bonded to their tax preparer up in the States, in Cleveland, Chicago, wherever, who might really excel at preparing taxes for residents up in the States, but he might not have any expat clients at all. So although your guy in Cleveland might have been good for you in your past life, once you get down here and become an expat, there are a lot of tax rules and regulations he might not be familiar with because he doesn't have any expat clients except you. So you might not know it, but you could be his tax guinea pig. So in my mind and from experience, I should say he might not be the guy to go to.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's true. I mean, and that's obviously where we do end up picking up a lot of business or a lot of is people that are Americans and they might have like a very good accountant back home and have like a 10, 20, 30 year relationship. But as soon as they move abroad, either the accountant doesn't know and he spends all his time researching it, or the accountant, I mean, if he's at least honest and truthful with himself, doesn't want to even deal with it because there are obviously big fines and penalties for getting this stuff wrong. But that's where we come in. We might even work hand in hand with the local accountant and say, okay, we're going to handle these fines, the FBAR, the foreign corps and all this stuff. And then the regular accountant just does the regular stuff. And we give them the PDF files and they could attach it with the return when they e-file it or mail it in. And that's not a problem either. I think you're right. It's a very niche market. I mean, there's just not a lot of people that really know what they're doing here. And then the other side of it is I see, you know, a lot of people that come to me and their accountant might have screwed up and they didn't take certain exclusions or the guy didn't know about the foreign income exclusion. And that's when we do the amendment to try and get people's money back.
In fact, the other day, Gringo got a hold of me. He's a strange case. He said he's just starting his Social Security and he owes some very delinquent school loans. And he knows sooner or later they're going to start deducting that stuff from his Social Security check. So the long arm of delinquent government debts can get you down here too. Though I understand the maximum they can take from you is 15% of your Social Security check, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, originally this guy was really worried because he thought they could garnish his check completely. Well, the government can do anything, right? But I guess there is that 15% limit. Now, Vince, most expat gonna-bes and wannabes and expats themselves are interested in getting their assets and their bank accounts, etc., out of the United States. But a lot of them have IRAs. So let's talk about what some people call the checkbook IRA, which allows you to hold things like gold and real estate and pretty much any asset outside of the country, and yet it's still in an IRA, which serves, of course, two purposes for the expat. One, you've got it all out of the country and Uncle Sam can't touch it. Two, you don't have to cash in your IRAs early and pay penalties and taxes and take what's left and then ship that out of the country. So it's safe and sound and out from under the greedy paws of Uncle Sam. So why don't you talk about that for a second?
I've done a lot of checkbook IRAs. In fact, I have one myself, and it's certainly a good option to invest in real estate, gold, private equity deals, etc. So that's actually something I own. I'm currently looking at buying a house in Medellin for investment purposes. Again, if you want to have kind of little pockets of investments around the world, then yeah, a checkbook IRA would certainly be a way to do that.
So do you recommend certain companies for a checkbook IRA, or do you set them up yourself?
I set them up.
Vince, having 600 or 700 expat clients, you must have had some very strange and interesting cases to deal with tax-wise. Why don't you tell us about one or two of those?
One really interesting story, the same guy I spoke with before about who got audited, because he was a merchant mariner. He was actually one of the guys on Captain Phillips' ship that got taken over by the pirates. He was out in the middle of the ocean quite some time, and part of the issue with the audit was that the auditor was saying, hey, well, he was in international waters. And I was like, well, yes, but he was kidnapped by pirates.
That's the movie they made with Tom Hanks as the captain, the one about the pirates around Africa, right?
Yes, exactly. So it was a whole big thing with the IRS, even about just how much income he could exclude because he was captured. And then my argument was he wasn't really working then. He wasn't earning income. He was in captivity. You know, it's just funny how the IRS tries to get you on it. I'm like, come on. The guy was in prisons, like, wrongfully for months. Come on.
The question is, who's the lesser of the two pirates here? Reason 4,576, why it's necessary to vote with your feet and get the hell out of the States before it's too late. Okay, on that happy note, I thought I was going to be able to finish that interview today, but looks like we're going to go into a bit of next week's show for the final segment, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, I want to remind you again to go to www.thenewexpat.com and check out my July 2016 Latin Insider Seminar. If you sign up before May 1st, you get in on the early bird discount. And finally, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Do subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.